There is no better place.
It's time to talk.
The only way to get anything done in Cork is to go on to the internet, right, you know?
Fair play.
Talk to Neil Prendeville.
That's a Cork threat at this stage, I think.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
I just love Cork people.
Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversation. The Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. Quite an amount of court reports, and I will be coming back to them in a big swoop with Barry Roche from the Irish Times, but they make many of the front pages and inside pages of the papers today. Prison time increased is the front of this morning's Echo. It has to do with the convicted rapist, the convicted killer Ian Horgan. You may remember he recorded a mocking video to the tune of Lovely Day after he viciously engaged in a hammer attack on a 29-year-old man. He had his 8.5-year sentence increased to 11 and a quarter years on appeal by the DPP. And of course, we know of him from some years back where he raped and killed a Cork girl who was just literally out for a walk. We will deal with this story a little later on, as I say, with Barry Roach from the Irish Times, where there's quite an amount of coverage with regards to it on the front and inside pages of the papers today. And if you recall, Fintan Tindley, he robbed a few different, well, two different post offices three times. He carried out the robbery on the South Douglas Road in November of, I think it was in November of 2020, a moment of correction on that, and then a little later on then, subsequent to that, he attempted a robbery in Ballintemple Post Office, and he was before the courts yesterday because the DPP was trying to appeal against the 4-year jail term that he got. The DPP was saying that it was too lenient. He raided three Cork post offices armed with a knife. You might recall that the barrister actually for the DPP said essentially the totality of the sentence is unduly lenient. She says not only were the post office victims of the crime, but Fintan Tindley caught a customer and held a knife to their throat in each of the robberies. The customers were a 72-year-old man in the first case, a 44-year-old woman in the second case, and a 45-year-old woman in the third. But the DPP failed in that one, and it's making the court report today. And so, I was telling you yesterday of Karen Harrington, who was serving a life sentence for the murder of 2-year-old Santina Cawley. She's in jail now and is appealing her sentence. And the father of murdered Santina Cawley spoke to Paul Healy exclusively in the Mirror, and he says that she is deluded. As she appealed her conviction last week, Santina's deluded killer is wasting everyone's time, he says. So that one makes this morning's Mirror. And then finally, with regards to the courts and what have you, there's this man, and these are allegations before the court of a man who's set fire to a house in Cork City. 4 people were celebrating Christmas Day. He wedged a plank of wood into the front doorway. This is Liam Heelan's copy from the Echo. So the plank of wood was wedged into the front doorway to barricade them. And then he stood outside swinging a blade when the first person ran out from the burning building. And he was allegedly told by the accused, "You're going to die here tonight." So that's a court report that makes this morning's Echo against... this is the case against Shane Casey. He was arrested, charged with arson, and was before Cork District Court yesterday. So more on those. The front page story making the Independent today has to do with a defamation case against a member of the far-right party, which is what they call it on the front of this morning's Indo. A far-right political party and its leader are being sued for defamation by a businessman whose home and a B&B, in which he previously had an interest in, were the subject of anti-immigrant protests. It's a High Court case taken by the Cork businessman Adrian McCarthy against the as they call him in the Independent this morning, anti-immigrant agitator Derek Bly and Ireland First. And it's thought to relate to social media postings. Now, there's a much lengthier story making the Independent today, but that's the front page. Far-right party leader sued for defamation. And then, of course, we have more news when it comes to asylum seekers, refugees, international protection order applicants who are here in Ireland, many of them staying in tents and what have you. And then, of course, Ukrainian war refugees. So Gerald Griffin Street, which is the home of a now long closed North Presentation Convent on Gerald Griffin Street, will now be able to take 107 refugees. This is the new regime of support available that the state are putting together for those fleeing war in the Ukraine. Now, much of it has changed now. The new rules for newly arrived Ukrainians means that they'll receive 38.80 instead of the €232 a week, and they can only stay 90 days in state accommodation. So that actually comes into effect today. Now, interestingly, Sinn Féin's Donnchadh Liara is doing the maths on that, and he says, here's how it makes absolutely no sense to him. He says, if you take typically a family of two adults and two children in one of the designated centres, between the payments and the child benefit, they would receive about €828 a month, right? So then they stay there for, 90 days. And then they move out. The same family moves out then, say, for instance, as an example, the North Presentation Convent in Geoghegan Street. So they've €828 for the 3 months per month. Then they move out and it changes significantly. The same family outside one of the centres would then receive €2,192 a month and €800 rent allowance. So they'd be like 2.5 times better off the minute they come out of, as an example, and I'm giving it as an example, the North Pres convent, which would bring their payment from €828 a month to just under €3,000 a month. So that is interesting. While at the same time, Leo Varadkar, he's doing a lot of talking over there in Boston. Firstly, he said that asylum seekers coming to Ireland may be sent to Turkey. It's like the Rwanda solution in the UK, but for the European Union, it would be Turkey. And we could well sign up to a new European proposal to deal with the immigration crisis. Now, the papers this morning are talking about big increases in the amount of people coming to Ireland on a monthly basis. Like, if you look at January and February, January was 1,800 asylum seekers. February was 1,600 asylum seekers. And he says that we have to come up. He says that people, but I see them actually getting tougher in their narrative, particularly Leo Varadkar. Not so much Micheál Martin, but certainly Leo Varadkar and Fine Gael. Like, he's saying that if people wanted to come to Ireland, that they should do so through the correct channels via work permits. So he's kind of saying that this is just getting beyond, sustainable now. If you want to come to Ireland, get yourself a work permit, full stop. But he is also talking then in Boston about the Irish, what we would call the undocumented Irish. And he's urging the US to regularize their status. But he said, give them status to stay, give them landed immigrancy and let them get on with their lives, but as part of an amnesty, but that they should, and they should also receive preference over other countries. So he's not holding back in that regard with the Yanks. But he said the undocumented Irish might have to, if it was suggested, might have to pay back taxes or other penalties, fines for staying undocumented, but pay up and then stay. But you imagine the amount of money that would be paid in back taxes, even if they could ever estimate what that cost would be. And then one final one on the Taoiseach. He says, and he's giving speeches, there's breakfasts and dinners and all sorts of stuff that he's going to. He said, how Donald Trump said the famous slogan, "Make America Great Again." Apparently, he said over in Boston that Sinn Féin will make Ireland broke again. Make Ireland broke again. So he's playing his Trump card, I suppose, if you like. Papers also then, there's a very inspiring story of a man who died at the age of 72. Now, you might not find anything particularly interesting in the death of Paul Alexander at the age of 78, but he spent 72 years living inside an iron lung from when he was a small boy, from polio at the age of 6. So from the age of 6 to his death at 78, he spent 72 years living inside in what really is a 300 kilogram ventilator. It's like he lived in a tunnel, like a CAT scan machine that you go into, one of those jobs. But he traveled the world. He had an extraordinary life. He qualified as a lawyer. He published a book and, as I say, traveled widely, despite living within a ventilator that literally kept him alive. I think it's an inspiring story out of Dallas. And another inspiring story is a billionaire who has admitted that it's boring sitting at home counting his money, and it would be a lot more fun to do something with it. So he's decided, and this isn't the first attempt, COVID scuppered the last one, he has decided that he's going to reboot the plans and he's going to build an exact replica of Titanic in every single way. The original went down in April 1912, killing an estimated 1,500 passengers and crew. He's going to rebuild it. It'll have the same interior, the same cabin layouts, the original vessel, complete with the ballroom, the swimming pool, the Turkish baths. And he says, guests who go on board and travel upon Titanic 2, should you choose to do so, are being asked to dress in the style of the early 1900s. It doesn't actually say, and the maiden voyage will also be out of Southampton, which means that if it follows the route of the doomed Titanic, then it would also anchor off Roach's Point. And we get to have a look at it. But when is all this going to happen? By 2027. So not too far ahead. I don't know where it's going to get built, but that sounds as if it would be built really quickly. No, if the Chinese would build it, but certainly one of the big issues with the Chinese is a story making the front page of the UK Times. They are so worried about TikTok in America that they are now about to vote in the House of Representatives a bill to ban TikTok in America, unless TikTok sell it, or indeed the Chinese ownership sell it and walk away from it. If they don't, then 150 million US users will have no more TikTok. And apparently they are bombarding the users of TikTok in America, bombarding their House of Representatives, representatives themselves in Congress and the Senate, begging and pleading them not to do it. And then, of course, just around the corner, the St. Patrick's weekend, and there's a nice little story making the Independent. I pass it on for what it's worth. It's a tidbit of information with regards to St. Patrick's Day is fast approaching. Many will enjoy a drink to mark the occasion, but this year the average weekly salary will buy you 32 fewer pints than it did 17 years ago. I'm just saying. Raisin Bank, who entered the market some years back, say in 2007 the Spice Girls and Boyzone were doing their thing, and on a average salary of €922, is that a week or is it a month, they said that you could sup 17 years ago, 196 pints. It's a weekly salary of, average salary of €922. So 196 pints back in 2007, and now 164 pints. And talking about money and things you spend money on, it's a lovely story in the Examiner this morning to do with how much the Tooth Fairy should pay out to children. Apparently, the article is suggesting that recent reports have found that some children are receiving items like video games, iPhones, and Louis Vuitton bracelets from the Tooth Fairy. Can you imagine? Like, can you imagine an iPhone? You think there might be a couple of pennies under there? Maybe, you know, maybe a €5 note or maybe a €10 note. But instead, it's a brand new iPhone from the Tooth Fairy. Then someone inside in the class got a tenner. Or if they're lucky, €20 or €30 from the Tooth Fairy. I'd say it's fivers and tenners, lads. Please tell me the Tooth Fairy is fivers and tenners. But the kids would then be inside in class wondering, how do you explain to a child who is wondering who's making these types of calls and these crazy decisions at Tooth Fairy HQ that one child would get, really, a Louis Vuitton bag for losing a tooth and somebody else gets a tenner? I don't know.
Call Neil now. 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
And as I mentioned this morning, text 0868 104 106, be part of the conversation. As I mentioned earlier on this morning in the newspapers, that we already know of Ian Horgan, because just to remind you, without wanting to be overly upsetting you, in 2000, October 26, Horgan, originally from Ballincollig, now in Macroom, was convicted in 2007 of the manslaughter and the rape of Rachel Kiley when, aged just 16, he attacked and strangled the 22-year-old beautician as she walked her dogs in Ballincollig Regional Park on October 26th, the year 2000. And many people back then, of course, not just here in Cork, but nationally, were saying and using the term, she was only out for a walk. It was an awfully horrific attack. So he did time for that. But the latest one, actually, my apologies, I think it's the 2020. It was actually just 2022. This is the case where the DPP appealed against the undue leniency of a sentence that was imposed on Horgan. And he was before the courts yesterday with the DPP asking for the sentence to be increased, with details of the attack and the assault and indeed the appeal. Enjoyed by Barry Rhodes, Southern correspondent with the Irish Times. Barry, good morning.
Good morning, Ian. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. So, Ian Horgan, back in court yesterday, the DPP saying that the 8.5-year sentence was too lenient. What was he sentenced for? Tell us about the attack. He came from Macroom up to Cork City. Why?
He came from Croom in to Cork City on a day in, I'm just looking here now, it was back in 2020. It was an attack on a guy called Hassan Baker and his mother, Mary O'Callaghan. They lived at Witcherly, McCurtain Villas off College Road. And he came with a change of clothes, a hammer. He went into a derelict shed on some waste ground, changed into a black hoodie, and he had a snood, so he sort of disguised himself, burst into the house, and he grabs Hassan Baker in an arm lock, basically suffocating him, choking him. He passed out, and then he started laying into him with a hammer, and he fractured his skull, fractured his cheekbone, and fractured his eye socket. Mrs. O'Callaghan, Hassan Baker's mother, tried to intervene and protect her son as he lay taking this beating, as it were, helpless, and she suffered a fractured wrist when he hit her with the hammer. He then put on a Dublin accent and said something about money, pretending it was a drug debt, trying to disguise himself. He headed off, changed back into, sorry, before he went then, he filmed it. He filmed Hassan Baker lying helpless and covered in blood. We saw actually footage of that yesterday in the court, and it was quite horrific. He headed off then, went down to Fitzgerald's Park, changed back into the original gear, and then he posted a video of the pond there to the sound of a Lovely Day, a Bill Withers song, and sent it to. He'd been going out with a woman, or Clarissa O'Callaghan. She was a former girlfriend of Hassan Baker, and he said he sent her a text message saying he destroyed him and he wasn't acting the hard man again. Mm-hmm. So that was the background to it. He had been given an 8.5-year sentence by Judge Helen Boyle at the Cork Circuit Criminal Court back in June. The DPP felt that was too lenient and they appealed it to the Court of Criminal Appeal. Just to say no for listeners, the Court of Criminal Appeal doesn't hear evidence. All it hears, it is given all the transcript of the trial, so it has the evidence from that, but all it hears is submissions from lawyers for the defence and for the prosecution, so and there's no jury or anything.
But the prosecution, was one of the prosecution's arguments that the trial judge failed to properly factor in, this is from your copy, Horgan's previous convictions for the manslaughter and rape of Rachel Kiley?
Yes, that was one of the arguments. Now, they made it under, there were sort of three submissions. One, that the headline sentence, which was 12 years, should have been higher.
15.
That it's a Section 4 assaults that carry a range of 10 to 15, but they felt, the DPP felt it should have been at 15. Then that the plea, the discount for the plea, they mentioned it in that they should have taken in, the trial judge should have taken into account his previous history, particularly the manslaughter and the rape of Rachel Kiley back in 2000 when he was convicted in 2007. And just to say, he was actually originally convicted of murder, but he appealed that.
Yeah.
And on the retrial, then he was convicted of manslaughter. Oh, right. He actually was convicted of murder for a period, but as I say, he appealed that. And that's why it took from 2000 to 2007 before it was finalised. He was also has numbers of convictions for robbery, for drugs, and for fray as well. So this Donal O'Sullivan for the estate was arguing that that should all have been factored into the judgment. And then the third one was that there was a third point he made, that this said assault on Mrs. O'Callaghan should be consecutive to the assault. The sentence for that should be consecutive to the assault on Hassan Baker. No, the judges didn't agree with him on that, or on the fact the previous should have been factored in the discount, but they said the previous should have been factored in on the headline. So they actually increased the headline sentence from 12 to 15. They gave him a 25% discount, so that brings it down to 11.25. Judge Boyle had given him a 6-month suspended period for rehabilitation, but they said given his previous record, it would be a real optimist would think that 6 months was going to incentivize him, suspending 6 months was going to incentivize him to rehabilitate given his previous record. So he ends up now doing 11.25 as opposed to 8.5 for the attack on the pair, and his mother.
Particularly evil individual. Then, of course, there was another appeal that failed. And this is the story of Fintan Tindley from Mahon. And people will recall his robbery and attempted robbery, the South Douglas Road post office, and then over to Ballantemple post office. I think one of them was attempted twice, wasn't it? That was before the courts yesterday, because he got a 4-year jail term, and they wanted that increased, didn't they?
Yeah, the DPP in this case was arguing that the headline sentence, which is what the judge indicates it should merit, but then starts discounting things because of pleas, no previous and all that. They felt the discount was too great in this. The original sentence, just to familiarise or remind readers of, or listeners, sorry, of the background, he went into South Douglas Road post office November the 11th, 22. And again, on the 18th, a week later, and in between, he went to Ballantemple Post Office. He actually put knives to the necks of three customers one customer in each post office. In the first case, in South Douglas Road, it was a 72-year-old man. In Ballantemple, it was a 45-year-old woman. 44-year-old woman. And then in South Douglas Road, the second time, it was a 44-year-old woman. So that was the background to it. He was arrested a short distance away after the second one, the attempted one in South Douglas Road. He left without anything that occasion. He got about 3,000 between the other two.
Mm. Wasn't he very naive parking his car near the post offices? Like, sure, that would have been.
Yeah, and a yellow Qashqai, a gold coloured Qashqai.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, it was ham fisted, to be honest about it. Yeah. And the whole background, of course, as we heard, was that he had run up debts going to America to meet his fiancée, this woman he'd met online, who was into playing the ukulele like he was. So it was a bizarre case, but anyway, the state argued that the headline sentence was 9, but that the judge had discounted too much to bring it down to 5 with one suspended, effective meaning 4. So they argued that the severity of the offending, the fact that he put knives to the throats or to the necks of three different people, was a very serious matter. They acknowledged he had no previous convictions, acknowledged he had pleaded guilty, but they pointed out that there was strong CCTV footage showing him coming out of the three post offices, and there was DNA evidence linking him, so that the plea wasn't as valued as much as there might be in a case that, you know, that the state didn't have a strong case against someone. So they argued that defence counsel Elizabeth O'Connell said the judge had approached the matter in a holistic way, and he'd imposed a robust headline sentence, but his final calculation of the penalty after taking all the mitigating factors like the guilty plea, the remorse, the fact no previous into account, and she described that as a very nuanced sentence. And she pointed out that while it might sound callous to say it, the actual amount of damage caused in terms of the total sums taken, 3,750, was modest. And she said that the judge had given proper consideration to his previous good character, guilty pleas, and genuine remorse.
Yeah, and it remained at 4 years. Like, if you do division on this, that's about a year and a half, a little over a year and a half, for each incident that involved a knife to the throat in each robbery, isn't it? If you think of it that way.
Yeah, plus the fact that he'll get remission for good behaviour. So I'd imagine he'll be out. He's probably done. I think he was remanded not long afterwards. He hadn't taken up bail. So November 22, he probably has about half it served already, I'd imagine.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so that's Fintan Tinley. And then finally, this is an active case. And much of this is allegations made against a man. And it's Shane Casey, arrested, charged with arson. People, you know, these are allegations, of course, but very serious ones where lives could have been lost. This is allegedly setting fire to a house on Christmas Day.
Yeah, as I said, the other two were Court of Appeal, Criminal Appeal. This is in Cork District Court. A guy called Shane Casey, he's living in Rathcormac, and he was charged yesterday with arson by Detective Garda Brian Byrne of the Bridewell. The background to it is that there was a fire at a house in Dyke Parade in the city centre on Christmas Day about 6 o'clock, and Garda investigated. They objected to bail, and Garda Byrne outlined the reasons. He said that was both on the basis of the seriousness of the charge, and that was reflecting the fact that arson carries a life sentence, and also the strength of the evidence. He said the state would allege that Shane Casey turned up inside the house in Dyke Parade just after 6 p.m. Christmas Day with a small bottle, and knowing it was occupied, he poured an accelerant from the bottle onto the front door and set it alight. Now that fire went out, but he then opened the door, went in, poured the accelerant around the hall and the foot of the stairs, set it alight again. And it was that fire that took off, as it were. And then he said they had CCTV footage of where he stands outside watching the front door. And at 6:06 p.m., he closes the front door and attempts to barricade the front door from the outside using a piece of timber to jam the side of the door and then on the floor. No, these are allegations, as I say, it's not proven yet.
Yeah, there's
four people inside, yeah. He takes a blade from his pocket, it's alleged. He holds it up in front of him and waits. And then when the front door bursts open, one of the men attempts to escape the blazing house. Casey swipes at him with the blade and he slices him twice in the forehead. The man had said he had no choice but to retreat back into the burning house with Casey in pursuit, and there can be seen tussling on CCTV. Three of them managed to get out. The fourth person couldn't because the fire actually spread across the first floor. So that person, a woman, had to flee to the roof, and it was only for the intervention of the fire brigade who came and managed to take her from the roof, and presume with one of the hoists or maybe a ladder, that she avoided serious injury or worse. The three others were taken, or three of them were taken to the hospital. They were later released. Gardy, he said, had strong evidence that it was all captured in CCTV. He wasn't masked. He was clearly identifiable. And Gardy met him later that evening, and he was wearing the same clothes that he was seen on CCTV. Now, We heard that Shane Casey didn't, he want to be held, or didn't want to go into custody. He wanted to be held, get bail, because he said he was on psychotic, antipsychotic medication, and he feared that if he went to prison, they wouldn't be able to give him the proper medication. And he was very concerned about that. And Judge Mary Dorgan said she felt the charges were too serious and remanded him in custody, but she did request the prison services to ensure that he did get his antipsychotic medication. So he's back in prison and remanded there to appear in court again on March the 20th.
Okay, where's that being heard? Is that Cork City?
That's Cork District Court, yeah. So that'll go to the District Court. But I'd imagine in early days yet, but it's a serious charge. So we may go further up the list to a circuit court at some stage down the road.
Great stuff. Thanks so much, Barry. Covered a lot of ground this morning. As always, well done. Barry Rhodes, Southern Correspondent with the Irish Times. Text 0868 104 106. Back after the break.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Text 0868 104 106, but please make sure you know who you're texting. I don't know whether somebody thinks that I'm running a little hair salon in a spare bedroom at home, but if it's you, just bear in mind you have sent me a text that does not belong to me. Hi girl, how are you? Whenever you get a chance, can you check if there's an available appointment for colour? I want to book extensions for the following week, so I need to get my colour sorted. If you thought that you sent that to your stylist or your beautician or your hairdresser, you didn't. You sent it to me. I'd give it a go for you. I mean, I'd give it a go if you bring the colour. You can wash it over the sink out in Douglas, but I'm not quite sure I can guarantee the result. Mind you, the idea of maybe a little salon and a spare bedroom, you know, my son is gone and my daughter is soon to go. I'll have a lot of spare bedrooms.
There you go. Now there's a new cotton colour. Prendeville salon.
I mean, it's like there's a whole. Actually, that would make a great competition mechanic, isn't it? Text when you texted the wrong person.
Text the wrong person. I'd love to know what you call your own salon, though. I'd love to see people see what.
Neely Pease.
Neely,
Jimmy the Locks.
Mind your P's and Q's.
Oh, Jimmy the Locks.
Yeah, I love it. Jimmy the Locks. I love it. That's it.
I love it.
Oh, well, forget about the call. Forget about the text.
I'm off down to Pamela Morrissey down in Sobey Brown's on a crash course on hair colour.
Yeah, get it done. Get it done for today so she can get the appointment. It looks like she's under pressure. Like, get it done for tonight.
If she came on the air, I'd pay for it myself. She just ring me in. Come on the air, I'd pay for it for you if you come on the air. Text 0868 104 106.
We're Galvin's, so we used to always get calls from Galvin's off license for Galvin's
home.
At home. I don't know why people did it, but I remember one day, and my mom won't mind me telling this story, a fella rings in and all I can hear my mom saying, I'm so sorry about that. I'm really sorry. Jeez, that's terrible. Jeez, that's awful. Apparently the guy rang up and he got some wine order and the wine was wrong, so he rang up Galvin's in a fit of rage saying, this is unacceptable. She played along the whole time until your man said, well, what are you going to do about it? And she said,
give me the right number.
This is a private residence. Yeah. I'm so sorry. I spent 20 minutes down the bank to my mom.
I'm going to give you the right number for Galvin's off license. I love it. Actually, it's on a serious note, can we actually stay with hospitality, if you don't mind? Last night, as you scroll through Cork News, as you do, I came across a very honest and open piece of audio. It runs just over about a minute 15 seconds, right? And it is Andrew Lone, who recently had to close Oakfire Pizza. In fact, it became the third establishment that I know of late on Princess Street that also had to close. Burnt Pizza closed. And so, of course, just at the start of the new year, did Nash 19, permanently shutting their doors. And that's just on the one street alone. But anyway, I'm going to talk to Andrew, but I thought if you could just bear with me and just hone in on the explanation that he put up online as to why so many people are struggling in business, particularly with regards to food and putting food on plates and serving customers in hospitality. So he takes €1,000 in gross pizza sales. What that means is, for every €1,000 that comes across the till into Oakfire Pizza in pizza sales, he breaks down all of the costs before you're left with what you would think and hope would be some profit. Okay, so just have a listen to this. And just bear with it. It's very self-explanatory, very honest, in fairness to him.
Hi there, Andrew here from Oakfire Pizza. Today I'd like to show you some of the costs involved in running a food business in Ireland in 2024. Obviously, so many businesses out there at the moment are struggling with costs, and restaurant closures have increased fivefold since this time last year. So let's have a look at a few examples of what it costs to run a restaurant in Ireland these days.
So here's our pizza pie chart, and we're going to slice this pizza up under the different costs of running a typical food business in Ireland based on €1,000 in gross sales. So the first slice of pizza goes to the government. That's the VAT at 13.5%, which went up from 9% last September. So that's €119. Food costs typically between 20 and 25%, €235. That's a quarter of the pizza. Other costs of sales, such as drinks, packaging, consumables, and service fees. Service fees might include aggregator commissions, for example, Deliveroo, Just Eat, Uber Eats, who can charge in some cases up to 35% of sales, so a very significant cost. Then our operating costs, which is everything from rent, rates, insurance, distribution costs, energy, utilities, legal, accountancy, repairs, maintenance, license fees, subscriptions. Then typically the biggest cost for any food business is the payroll, €284. And the last little sliver of pizza, which is left, also goes to the government. So the government get the first slice and the last slice. That's employers' PRSI, €28. After that, what's left is zero. And this is the sort of profit margin that most food businesses in Ireland are operating under nowadays. Margins are so tight. So that's it. There you have it. That's what it looks like to run a food business in Ireland in 2024.
Very open and honest and shocking, actually. Andrew Lone from Oakfire Pizza joins me by phone. Andrew, good morning.
Morning, Neil. How are you?
That's a shocker. The government takes the first slice and they also take the last slice. And on every 1,000, there is nothing left that you would call net profit at all.
That's the reality. Now, Neil, can I just clarify one thing there? Yeah. We're actually not closed in Prince's Street. We haven't closed at all. We're still up and running very much.
Okay, my apologies.
Sorry, there might have been a miscommunication there. It's shocking. Yeah, it's. I suppose the reason we did that is because we're hearing a lot of the same stories from around the country. Since we posted that, I've got dozens of phone calls, emails, messages from other food traders around the country who are having the same experience.
Well, I'm happy to correct the miscommunication. You're right. You're open and you're trading.
Very much.
But
very much so, yeah.
Trading.
And trading very strongly. We're very busy.
But how if there's no profit in it? It's treading water, is it?
Treading water, yeah. It's the same thing up and down the country. People aren't even thinking about profit. It's kind of survival and just get to the next month, get to the next quarter.
So, like, I could say to you, put up the cost, put up the price of the pizza by €1 or €1.50. But are you saying customers would notice that if it was 50 or 75 cent and they go elsewhere, would they?
Yeah, definitely. There's a bit of that. The last time we increased our prices, though, was last September when the VAT rate went back up to 13.5%. And we worked out that we needed about an extra 50 cent per pizza to cover that extra VAT. And we basically lost the same amount of volume in sales as what the increase would have brought in. So we had the increased VAT at the same turnover. And generally, I mean, we've had so many cost increases over the last few years that, we've had to introduce a few price increases over the last 6 months, 12 months ago. Mm. And generally, every time you go up a little bit, you lose a little bit of volume. I suppose you just move outside the kind of affordability bracket for a certain percentage of your customer base.
As in, you're pushing closer and closer to the €20 pizza mark kind of thing, and that's somewhere you don't want to go.
Yeah, that's somewhere we don't want to go.
So the VAT, the food costs, the other costs of sales, operating costs, wages and employer PRSI, those operating costs, does that include rent and rates and things like that and property
tax? Yeah, all that kind of stuff, insurance, property, yeah, all that kind of stuff, yeah.
Okay, so at the end of every month, zero. And do you think, could that be the reason then that we had certainly the closure of Nash 19, certainly the closure of Burnt Pizza, and hundreds of closures since the start of the new year nationally because of your breakdown of a food, in your case it's pizza, but that could be interpreted in any other kind of food serving, couldn't it?
It's up and down, it's from fine dining down to your chipper, like it's everything in between. And I suppose a lot of businesses have gone over the edge, gone into liquidation, insolvency. Some businesses have closed, kind of recognising that that's the direction they're going, and they've made the call to get out while things aren't too bad.
But what can be done to improve things? Because there will always be VAT. You will always have PRSI, for instance. So the two that the government take, that's never going to go away.
It's never going to go away, but I suppose the argument, especially from the Restaurant Association and just restaurant groups all over the country, is obviously the the VAT rate being tied to accommodation businesses. And, you know, there's an argument there that that should be split between accommodation staying at the 13.5% food businesses because of the profitability issue and the customer spending habits, that should be at the reduced rate of 9%.
So there was profit when it was 9%, but when it went back up again to the 13% or whatever, that's when the profit got eaten up.
The profit was so tight that, I mean, I suppose if, like, the VAT rate went down to 9% back in November of 2020,
yeah,
as a response to the COVID pandemic, business were obviously struggling then too. And between then and last September, when it went back up, I mean, you have the war in Ukraine, you have energy crisis, you have food cost increases, wage increases, there's, you know, inflation as well on top of that. So it's been kind of reintroduced back to the 13.5%, but in the meantime,
all of this other stuff
has come up.
Yeah.
So and has come up around it. So for us to, you know, it's just another increase again.
Minimum wage went up as well. Employers' responsibility for sick pay and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And then you have pension enrollment, auto enrollment coming later this year. You know, it's fairly relentless. It doesn't seem to be any let up.
Yeah, and but are you going to continue though? Are you going to keep fighting the good
fight? Absolutely, absolutely. Oh yeah, absolutely. We're trading very strongly, and that's the message I'm getting from other food traders around the country. They're very busy. The queue's out the door, but it's just very difficult to turn a profit over it.
A lot of them
actually find it reassuring, you know, that they're not alone, you know, that we're all in the same boat.
Well, I'd never seen anybody do it like you did online, where you did it in under 90 seconds and explained everything people need to know with regards to your pie chart, as in your pizza pie chart. But could it be a fact that, and we're talking about Cork now primarily, that we just have too many food offerings and there isn't enough population to go around? And that this cull, for want of a better term, these closures, are because there's too many?
I mean that's possibly a consideration, but like I said, you know, it's not lack of footfall, it's not lack of bums on seats, it's businesses are busy, so it's not a demand problem, it's just the cost of doing business, you know. And
so you're never busier, but never making as little
never
as you
busier
are.
We're up year on year for the last few years. Year on year sales are up everywhere, and it just seems to be, you know, you kind of get a little bit ahead and something else comes along to knock it back again. And I suppose sometimes people tend to look at, you know, you go into a restaurant and you see a piece of fish on a menu at €35 or something, and you think, sure, I can get that piece of fish down the fishmongers for €4.
Mm.
I suppose we're trying to demonstrate all the other stuff that goes with it. You know, it's not necessarily just the actual material cost of what's on the plate.
Yeah, and then of course, then you have people who also go overseas on summer holidays, and they see comparable prices in the likes of, as an example, Spain, and they wonder why in the name of God it's so dear in Ireland. That's because we're being ripped off.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Spain, you're talking about a minimum wage of somewhere like €6 or €7 for your staff, and I mean, we certainly don't begrudge staff a minimum wage increase. They needed it, and you know, most of our staff would have been well above it anyway. So these things in themselves aren't tipping businesses over the edge. It's just the collective, the relentless increase after increase that we've been bombarded with over the last few years. Mm. Food costs, you know, flour as an example, obviously is a major ingredient for us with pizza.
Mm.
It's doubled in the last few years.
So you make your own pizza base then?
Yeah, we have a production kitchen down in Clonakilty where we mix all our pizza doughs and our sauces and slice our meats and all of our toppings.
Because there would be profit if you bought in the pre-prepared pizza base and jarred or canned sauce, wouldn't it? There'd be profit then.
There would. You'd have a massive labour saving, obviously. We have a whole production team and distribution team down in Clonakilty, so they're delivering into all of our restaurants 7 days a week. Every morning they get a delivery, so it's all fresh food. And it's
no, my point is that if you were to, the only way you'd make profit is to cheapen the product.
Buy in the pizzas pre-prepared,
buy in the canned sauces, you know, cut corners is what I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and the big chains are doing it. You know, they're making the profits. You know, Domino's results came out there yesterday. I think they made about 9% net profit. You're talking 150 million last year. So the big chains are doing it, and obviously have that buying power. It's the smaller businesses that don't have that.
So for those that are trying to keep it fresh or organic or making it themselves from start to finish, in your case pizza, but in other businesses it could be other things, it's much more expensive, and that's where you end up with zero, where the big multiple chains who buy in bulk, and much of it is kind of longer life stuff, that's where the profit is.
There you go. Yep, absolutely.
So what's the future going to hold for you then?
We're you know, I suppose we kind of take it year by year at the moment, and the first 10 weeks of the year tend to be the most challenging, obviously, cash flow wise and turnover wise. So we're kind of past that. We're, you know, facing into a busy weekend. Easter's around the corner. This is a good time of year to be facing into. It's difficult, it's challenging conditions, you know, but look, I suppose the positive thing is that the spending is still there. You know, the customers are still there, the footfall is there, the phone is still ringing, the orders are flying in. So it's there seems to be something broken somewhere in the system.
Well, when you break down the prices, certainly there's nothing left at the end of the day. Thanks so much. Have a great long weekend, and stay in touch. But thank you for taking the call.
Thanks,
I do appreciate it. Andrew Lone from Oakfire Pizza on Princess Street. Text 0868104106, particularly if you're in the trade yourself. Love to hear from you. Very open and honest breakdown. Back after 10.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
And from yesterday, quite an amount of response to the state of the city, if you like, with everybody having their own stories to share. I didn't get to all of them yesterday. One of the reasons that we see more and more antisocial behaviour perhaps is, one texter says, you vote for politicians because they promise tax cuts. They in turn cut social services, and then we're all surprised by antisocial behaviour. But hey, there's always the foreigners to blame. These are complicated issues that have no simple solutions. Yeah, I'm not so sure that it is as simple as you're making it out to be. I know there are an awful lot more temptations now in 2024 than, say, there was 30, 40 or 50 years ago. But certainly you go back far enough, a couple of generations, where there was very little money, shocking poverty, but there was nowhere like the amount of antisocial behaviour. I accept that drink and drugs are a big problem now. The police in France do not tolerate the tents in Calais like they do in Dublin. Gardaí are not able to handle the influx anywhere anymore of beggars, asylum seekers and dropouts. Just saying. Anthony says, as this country slips downhill at a fast rate and shoplifting is at an all-time high, along with other rising crimes, we don't have the policing to go anywhere near dealing with it. And to believe that the same Garda force suspended a guard for 3 years with pay for loaning a bike to a pensioner is unreal. Morning, I was recently in Madrid. The security staff had a high presence in yellow type uniforms. The security staff also carried batons, as in the shops security staff. They looked like the type of security that wouldn't take any kind of crap. Cork needs this type of security. Also, the cops had a high presence and they were not hiding away. So you see a lot of police in Madrid and you see security staff in yellow flak jackets with batons. Can't come on air. I just got back into my car in town now. I had to buy a tin whistle for my grandchild. I was met with two dealers on Oliver Plunkett Street. Dreadful experience. Our government is a disgrace and it's only getting worse. So everybody has a story about going into town. Let's learn to say Níl Aon Airgead Agam. This is a phrase we should use more often to those begging on our streets. Much of the begging in our city centre is organised begging, and therefore, I suppose, organised crime. Organised begging may be connected to people trafficking as well. In order to prevent organised begging, we must learn to stop giving money to the so-called beggars. There are genuine cases out there and supports are available, so please consider that it may be best to divert any donation you may wish to give to a local charity like Penny Dinners instead. They really do support the less fortunate. This will ensure that your money does go more to those that need it most, says Councillor Paddy Deneen. And just one or two more. I have to agree with every speaker on your programme. This is from yesterday morning and those who texted in on the show. The city is an absolute no-go. I work in hospitality outside the city and advise our tourists, if they ask, to avoid Cork City. It's so shameful I have to do this, to my wonderful city. Isn't that sad to hear that somebody working in hospitality, dealing with tourists in the county somewhere, I don't know where, tells tourists to avoid Cork City. Regarding the increase in homeless rough sleepers in Cork, the last I heard, Ireland had well over 1,000 international protection seekers who were refused accommodation in Dublin. If there are only 200 of them in tents on Mound Street, where are the others gone? I reckon they're on the streets in Cork and other places in Ireland. And maybe they were trafficked here. It's an absolute disgrace. And a final one, my son wants to go to town after his confirmation this week. No way will I allow him in. It's like the Walking Dead with people on drugs. The problem for your son, actually, is not unlike the call we had on air yesterday morning from a mother whose son was in town. She told two or three different stories, but one of them was that his dad gave him €120 to buy a tracksuit. Tracksuits are dear. And of course, he was in town and had his money in his pocket, and two teenagers, around about 14 years old, on the top of Grand Parade there, as you turn and swing over to Patrick Street, just at Deals, they brought him down the side lane there and they robbed him. Took his €120. That's the problem your son could have if he went into town with a few bob in him. Even if he didn't have a few bob, he could get a beating if he didn't have money. So that's what parents need to be aware of. So text 0868 104 106. We spoke of that. In fact, Councillor Ken O'Flynn was talking about this last night online. I think he sent a letter off to the Minister for Justice. The escalating issue of organised begging that has plagued our city in recent weeks. And he joins me by phone. Councillor O'Flynn, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you today?
And what's to be done about it? You say, and many people believe you to be right, that an awful lot of them are not homeless, they're not down on their luck, they are organised and exploiting people, moving from place to place, pitch to pitch, being dropped off in the morning and taken home in the evening. Isn't that the case?
Well, that is very much so the case, Neil, and I think you had a caller on yesterday saying pretty much the same thing as what I'm saying. We do have a group that have moved, that have been moving around the country for a number of years now. I think the last place they came from was Galway. They seem to be back into Cork. They're coming in 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning. These are a group of foreign nationals, or you know, they're certainly not Irish, they're not speaking English. They're begging on the streets. They're collected later on at 6, 7 o'clock in the evening, taken away in jeeps and vans, and moved on to different places. This is also happening in small towns around Cork at the moment, anywhere between Youghal to Mallow. We're seeing an influx as well of these particular people that wouldn't be indigenous to the area, wouldn't be known to the locals, wouldn't be engaged with homeless services, wouldn't be engaging with any of the services or the wraparound services that are available. So that sends an indication very quickly. The fact that they're being collected in the evening and piled into vans and taken somewhere else seems to also give a very clear indication.
Somebody said in a text there, are they actually, those that are being piled in and out of vans, that's a new one on me, but let's say that is the case. Are they begging against their own will?
Well, Neil, you know, I think I discussed this on various radio programs not so long ago, where I did highlight that I had been contacted by a member of the Romanian community at the time. I wrote to the Romanian ambassador about this, about repatriation of some people. Some people are being held there in the sense of they're being, to my mind, it's human trafficking. To my mind, it's people that are, passports are taken off them and saying, you know, you're working off a debt in this country. Look, we know that happens with prostitution in this country, where none of us are silly, but it does happen with older people as well. And said, you're sent out onto the street and you're paying off somebody to get your passport back and to get your passage into Ireland or your passage into Europe.
So should we be feeling sorry for them then, if that possibly is the case?
Well, Neil, first of all, I wouldn't be giving them any money, because that money is being handed up to somebody who's involved in organised crime. The big problem we have here is that, you know, we're dealing with archaic laws when it comes to begging. There is no law essentially when it comes to organised begging or the investigation of organised begging. It's very, very tight knit, because it's happening in a community that doesn't generally speak English, that a vulnerable community that doesn't have the backups and doesn't know their rights or look at the laws that are here available to them. And this is a serious problem. And it is happening in our city. It's happening in Dublin. It's happening in Galway. It's happening all over the country.
But if no law has been broken, and there has been a lot of criticism of sections of the Roma community in the past, but if no law has been broken, then it's none of our business what they're doing on the streets.
Well, that's why I'm asking the minister to get involved in this, because, Neil, I don't think it's fair to send women, children, elderly people out onto the streets begging and handing over their monies to somebody who's organising them. I don't think it's fair if there's somebody involved that is going out begging on the street, and they're begging on the street because their passport or all their rights have been taken off them. Unfortunately, you're right in the sense that there is laws that are not available, that are available in some countries that are not available here or have not been updated.
Unless they're aggressively begging or hassling people at ATM machines would be an example of that. That is illegal.
That is illegal. But it's heartbreaking to hear, and I have heard the stories, and I have met the people, some of the people, who have been in a situation where they can't get out of. And to my mind, that there's a bit of human trafficking law involved in that. That's the reality of it. It's very hard to investigate. It's very difficult for the Gardaí to get somebody to speak.
No, if they don't speak, then they can't investigate a crime. If there nobody
correct,
says anything,
correct. Yeah. It's very, very difficult. But there has to be some powers for the Gardaí to investigate organised begging and for a blocking of organised begging on the streets. Most people I know, Cork people that I would know, would always throw a couple of bob to you and say, Jesus, God love us. You know, there for the grace of God go I. To somebody that's out on the street and somebody that's finding it tough on the street. That's what we do. We're very generous to people. But there are, you know, to my mind, this is a con job. This is people that are being sent out onto the street that are begging that shouldn't be begging in the first place. Okay. Shouldn't be there in the first place.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
And that's the reality of what's happening. The minister needs to step up to this. We're way behind in legislation on all of these things compared to mainland Europe.
Okay. Can I just ask you, I'm talking to you, are you okay with the allocation of the presentation convent on Gerald Griffin Street? It's going to be like 107 Ukrainian refugees moving in there. That's all very well. Nothing to see here.
Well, Neil, the reality is that convent has been used in the last 6-7 months for Ukrainian refugees anyway. So I'm not good. The government seems to be rehashing and reusing numbers and throwing them out saying, look what a great job we're doing, give us a pat in the back when it comes to handling the refugee crisis. As we know, we had an open door policy from Minister Martin and the Taoiseach where they say come to Ireland, and they sent out the tweet saying come to Ireland, Ireland is available. We now see tents on the street in Dublin where refugees are being held. You know, look, a government that couldn't...
They're entirely different. They're international protection seeking males. The Ukrainian refugees, the war refugees are dealt with somewhat more compassionately, and that's why Gerald Griffin Street's been put aside.
To my mind, a refugee is a refugee, and I've had this on your conversations on your programme. I don't believe in this international protection order with people clearing up their passports and coming into the country and saying, yeah, I'm here and I need accommodation.
What would you do? Send them back, is it?
I would, yeah. Absolutely. I'd turn them around. Absolutely.
It's interesting. Leo Varadkar is kind of saying something similar in Boston at the moment. He said, if people want to come to our country, they should do so through the correct channels using work permits.
Well, what he's saying and what he's doing seem to be two different things. That's not unusual for that gentleman. But what he's saying and what he's doing, what he's saying in Boston and what he's doing here are two different things, because we've seen it and we've witnessed it all ourselves, and we've seen what's going on online. You could have just said that unit has been used. But what amazes me is that we have the old airport terminal sitting there empty for the last 20 years, which is a public building, which is owned by us. We're not renting it or leasing it off anybody. We're not making any hotel owner rich by using that building. That could have been used very easily and turned around as a facility to process refugees, to return them back and to accommodate refugees. But yet it sits idle.
I think they're knocking that. The plan is to demolish it, is it?
Well, the plan is to demolish it for the last 5 years. It's still not demolished.
And has it been empty for 20 years?
Yeah, we're talking the new terminal. It's now 20 years old. Believe it or not.
And so this would be under the control of the DAA, Dublin Airport Authority, but it wouldn't have stopped a government minister to say, listen...
We'll take this building. It's the ideal place. If you're flying into Cork Airport and you're and you're saying, I'm claiming refugee status for whatever reason, whether you're Ukrainian or non-Ukrainian, and there could be an entire processing centre there and a turnaround centre there with accommodation. That's an empty building that we own. Like, we're now witnessing, as you pick up one of the Sunday papers, the Mirror or whatever, they'll give you a list very, very quickly of how much money is being spent on private hotel accommodation and private buildings that have been redone and reimagined for refugee centres. I just don't understand that there must be an awful lot of empty publicly owned buildings that haven't been used at all, whether they're by the Department of Justice, the Department of Health, or the DAA.
They say at Cork Airport, because we checked with them yesterday, because I knew you were going to bring this topic up, they said that they have plans to demolish the old terminal in order to build more gates, departure gates, to expand capacity and allow more flights in. Don't know how much work would be...
Subject to funding, they haven't received any funding as of yet. I think Niall McCarthy does a fantastic job up there, by the way, but I know they've received 12 million to put in a mezzanine floor to expand the existing terminal upstairs to give a greater choice for the the duty free, but there has been no funding come down from government as far as I'm concerned.
But don't you expect that with the change now, I mean, Ukrainian refugee will no longer receive 220 odd euro, they'll receive 39 euro a week instead, that there might be less inclination for people to want to come here and that the numbers will dwindle?
We're definitely less attractive now. Yeah, definitely, but it's taken us... But you bear in mind that the 80,000 refugees that are here at the moment will be receiving the same monies that they were receiving at the start. That this only comes into effect for a few land in the country today.
So a family from Ukraine, say for instance, and Donegal Éire gives an example of a family of two adults and two children who would be outside of the designated centres would get 2,192 euro a month plus 800 euro rent allowance. So a family, when they leave the provision of, say, for instance, Gerald Griffin Street, they'd get 3,000 euro a month when you include rent allowance. Would you regard that as a lot of money?
I regard that as an awful lot of money. Of course it's an awful lot of money, Neil. Neil, there's reality here, and you know it as well as I do, there's people listening into this programme whose sons and daughters are struggling. There's couples there that are unemployed, that can't make ends meet. There's people I'm meeting all the time that can't even find property to rent. You know what my biggest call now these days is, people saying to me, Ken, do you know any auctioneer that could get me on a list so I could rent privately?
But that's destined to get worse if somebody a family of Ukrainians who are looking, because they're after their 90 days
cards as well being issued on this as well.
There's what?
So where there's medical cards being issued.
Oh yeah, there's medical cards. I'm including children's allowance and everything with it. But yeah, somebody who leaves after 90 days in Joe Griffin Street, that family will get 3,000 euro per month. These are Donegal Éire's figures, 3,000 just under it a month. And they also will be entering the race for a rental property. Is going to put more pressure on the rental market.
More pressure on the rental market, and also the addition, as I said, about the medical cards. I don't know where we're going to get the doctors and nurses for this, because we're already Mallow, for instance, Glanmire is the same. You're on waiting list. You're on waiting list to be on a waiting list now to get a private doctor to be able to use your doctor. So I don't know where we're going to get. I don't know how we're going to manage this. Okay. But again, as I said, this is the government who told us that they were going to manage the entire housing crisis, and then they bring in 80,000 refugees from the Ukraine, the additional refugees that have come in.
Okay,
and so, couldn't manage that.
So just finally, the old terminal at Cork Airport, you've got being a bonnet about that one. But what really could be used is the old Cork prison? Surely there's no plans for that. It's not going to be demolished like the old airport terminal. It still is capable of lighting and heat and services and toilets and bathroom and running water. Surely that should be.
I'd have no objection to using that. And there's also a number of HSE buildings around the city and county that are empty. I don't know if the HSE even knows they own them, but I'd have no problem using the old Cork prison.
Okay.
And I think that's the facilities that we should have used first day, and we should have looked at those before we go out into the private sector making millionaires, multi-millionaires.
Thanks, Ken.
People are making a lot of money out of this, Neil.
Thanks, there's nothing wrong with being engaged in capitalism
the best to look to them.
Thanks for that. Thanks a lot, Ken O'Flynn, Councillor Ken O'Flynn. I mentioned that point actually because Margaret from Musgrave Estate said, I was listening intently to your show yesterday. For the life of me, I don't understand why the old Cork prison hasn't been used for anything. I suppose I would say. But Margaret says, for homeless accommodation, it still has all the necessary services intact, like electricity, water and heating. It's a no-brainer. There are 153 usable cells, kitchen facilities and a sports hall to address the city's homeless crisis in the short term. Now, I don't know whether that is fair or kind or a dignified thing to suggest that somebody would go into a cell. But maybe if you were saying that if it was refurbed and that things were changed around in there and some of the interiors and the cells were made bigger, and we didn't call them cells, but they were bigger, yeah, you know, sleeping accommodation, that might be kinder, wouldn't it? Anyway, Margaret says, the site could also be used for those caught in town under the influence of drink or drugs. They could also be placed there in a separate section to dry out or come off whatever drugs they're on for a few days at least. Maybe then, after a few stints in there, they might get it. They might get the clarity of being drug and alcohol free. You could have proper supports, or such as like a psychological assistance for mental health issues. The old terminal at Cork Airport, which has lain idle for decades, could also be used as some sort of accommodation centre, couldn't it? Once suitable security measures have been put in place to satisfy the DAA. Yeah, I don't know that you'd ever get homeless services into Cork Airport, considering the security and the dangers of being around planes and things. But anyway, the Catholic Church and the HSE could also do something with their empty properties. And where the church has a number of priests living in big houses on their own, they could look at moving some in together and do something with the church's properties when they're freed up. It would be the Christian thing to do. I also believe, says Margaret, that Irish Rail have empty properties, and we all know of the city and county councils who have untold amount of empty properties, not to mention the HSE. A full audit of council property should take place. Only last week, your reporter found 9 apartments in St. Finbar's Road that have been empty for over 5 years. In the middle of a housing crisis. As you say yourself, Neil, you couldn't make it up. Thank you, Margaret, by email to neil@redfm.ie.
Call Neil now. 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
And you can text 0868 104 106. I'll talk to Kathleen in a couple of seconds. But we have music to play out again this morning. We've got great live music as we kick off, not just today, but also tomorrow. We head into the St. Patrick's weekend. And of course, I'm trying to get as much music like we did last year on air. So we'll start today, and I'll tell you more about that throughout the course of the morning. And also, for those of you who have been asking as to what's going on over the St. Patrick's Festival, and it is a festival, there's a lot more than just one. Sorry, just talking about St. Patrick's, I heard something yesterday. Do you still have Ken O'Flynn? Could I just have him back for 1 second? Thank you. I think he's still on hold chatting there, so I just want to talk to Councillor O'Flynn again, because I don't know whether this is anything that's come up. And this, Ken, this could be a complete flyer now, or this mightn't even be 100% accurate. But has there been any talk at council, or indeed at a councillor's meeting on Monday night or anything, about the St. Patrick's Day parade and what supposedly the Lord Mayor wants to dress up as?
No discussions on council.
Okay.
I know that there's lots of plans in it for Patrick's Day, okay, organised by Cork City Council. Okay. But no discussion on the council floor.
Okay, this could be right or wrong, and I have a call into him to find out if it's true or not. And I'm not, this is not April 1st or anything, but I did hear that it was proposed, or he wishes, or someone, he can correct me if I'm wrong, wanted to dress up as Willy Wonka, and that the officials in City Hall said, yes, you can, but you can't wear the chain. Did you hear anything of that?
I did hear that the Lord Mayor was planning some surprises for the people of Cork on Patrick's Day.
Okay.
But you will have to ask him if there's difficulty between himself and the officials inside.
But could it be? I saw him in a green suit last week. You know, the Begara Irish green suit with the big top green hat. It kind of looked like the stage Irish kind of thing from back in the day. But would it be seen as disrespectful to wear a chain in a Willy Wonka costume, for instance?
Yeah, well, look, you're really putting me on the spot.
No, I think
is respectful to the office, and what other people think is respectful to the office might be two different things, you know. Look, that's entirely up to the Lord Mayor, what his decision to dress up as. The chain and the office of Lord Mayor should always be held with the best and the most respect. You know, this is the chain of office that McCurtain and Max Sweeney wore. And I always believe that that has to be respected. You are acting as the first citizen. But look, I think the conversation that you're having there with me and the questions you've put at me...
No, I wonder, was there any talk about it? Because I want to be fair and accurate.
If you've heard the rumours, I've heard the rumours.
But if it is a festival and everybody else is dressing up and we'll have many people in different costumes, why shouldn't the Lord Mayor also be allowed to partake?
Yeah, no, look, the Lord Mayor is a great guy, and he's very theatrical and very musical, as we all know now as the citizens. And I'm sure I don't think he's put a foot out of place yet as Lord Mayor. I think he's been very good, and I'm sure he'll make the right decisions.
But if that decision...
That's fair enough, no, Nathan.
No, I'm okay. I'm overstaying my welcome with you. But if that is a Willy Wonka costume, and city officials, who has the call on the respect of the chain? Would that be the city manager or some other department?
That'd be down to protocol and the corporate affairs team as well, you know. And in fairness, they work very hard and they work very, very well, and they'd always have to the foremind the respect and the honour of the chain. But I can confirm, even though I've thought it about many of my fellow colleagues and council, nobody is dressing up as an Oompa Loompa.
Don't even why I'm having this conversation. I had got the impression that there was some kind of a standoff in City Hall over the Willy Wonka costume and the chain. But
you might say that. Okay. I couldn't possibly comment.
Okay. I'll see what the Lord Mayor's office has to say on the matter. Thank you, Ken. Appreciate that.
That's
Ken O'Flynn. We all in the times we live could do with a bit of laugh nonetheless. But should I even ask the question? If it's true, do you think it's a step too far? Lord Mayor in a Willy Wonka costume with the chain of the first citizen, the Lord Mayor of Cork, around his neck. Text 0868104106. Pick up the phone on 0818104106. It reminds me, actually, because you do see from time to time, and I know there was a striptease act that was making the news there a few months back where the lads were doing the striptease and they were holding up the tricolour to cover their nether regions. And I couldn't help but think, well, that's a little bit of a step too far when it comes to our national flag, I thought. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being a bit OTT on the matter. Anyway, text 0868104106 to Serious Matters. Kathleen, you've been waiting a long time, and my apologies for that. Did you want to pick up on conversations from yesterday, was it?
Hi, Neil. Yeah, I just texted in yesterday that I agreed with that lady. The city is absolutely gone to wreck and ruin. I have been up there quite a number of times in the last few weeks because connection, visiting somebody in hospital, etc. And the city is a scary place, Neil. It's not like it was before.
So you wouldn't have been travelling from the suburbs. You've been travelling from further afield, is it, up to Cork City?
Middleton area.
Okay. So you'd have...
I was around the city then. I had to be around there for a number of hours at times or whatever, you know. And what I saw was frightening.
Like what?
Absolutely frightening. Lots of people in doorways, sleeping bags, people begging, people high on drugs, alcohol. Even in McDonald's, I was in McDonald's for coffee, and the two lovely security guys in there have body cams on. You know, it's necessary because that day when I had a coffee in there, those people just crossed the street from the McDonald's doorway begging as well.
And sleeping in doorways, they are. Yeah,
it's frightening. It's absolutely frightening. It's not a safe place.
And tell me,
Okay.
I'll come back to other aspects of your city visit, but let me ask you the question: do you have anybody begging in doorways or sleeping in doorways in Middleton Town Centre?
Personally, I haven't seen it, Neil, okay. But somebody I know has seen it the past couple of weeks, yeah, that there have been somebody around. Now, before, near the Aldi,
yeah,
under the kind of archway near the Aldi in Middleton, there was, yeah, but I haven't seen anybody recently, but I have heard they are there.
And hospital visiting times are 6 to 8, which would see you as a single female walking from the Mardyke area back to Cork train station, right?
Yeah, I did that once or twice as well. I drove then after that because it wasn't safe. I didn't see, for all the people that are around the streets, you know, in trouble with the addictions and stuff like that and begging, I didn't see one Gardaí. And I'm talking about five or six different occasions.
both day and evening.
You got to ask yourself the question. You're probably asking yourself the question, how did it get this bad? I was going to say so fast, but this has been gradually growing.
Very quickly, very recently, it's been happening. And also, I saw a beautiful young girl at the North Main Street car park last week. I think it was Friday evening. She didn't fit the bill. She was well-dressed. She was well-groomed. She had two suitcases with her. This is now at the entrance to North Main Street. You know where you go in there to the car park?
Yes.
And I was puzzled. She looked very young, 18, 20. And it troubled me. Now, there was an elderly person went over chatting to her when I was leaving the car park. So I thought, very uncomfortable about it all. And I wondered then, was somebody watching her? Had somebody got her there begging? So I thought, well, on the way back, I'll have a little chat with her and just ask her, is she okay? But she was gone. She was gone by the time I got
back. But she struck you as quite vulnerable looking.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Okay. She didn't look the part. You know, she wasn't inebriated or anything like that. And two cases with her and just sitting on the ground begging.
You don't know. You see, you don't know anymore whether that's genuine or whether it's a setup.
Exactly.
You just don't know.
Exactly. But it is very sad. I love Cork City. I moved from Dublin down here to Cork in 1976. Love the city. Love going up there. Love the buzz of it. But I can't say that anymore, hand on my heart. It's not safe. And then you don't have the presence of the Gardaí. So these people, you know, that are... it's intimidating. They have the power, really. It's intimidating. There was another instance then, another evening. It would have been around 7-ish. I was walking back for for the train, and there was hardly any females on Patrick Street. I did notice that. That was very noticeable. Mm. Like, you had these people drinking in the doorways and stuff like that. You had a couple of guys walking on the street. There were very, very few females there as well.
To some extent, we have surrendered the city that we knew and were fond of, haven't we? Very much so. We've surrendered it.
No, you said it, Neil. Yeah. Well, not willingly. It's just that they've taken over.
Yeah.
They've taken over. It's not a safe place.
Yeah, that's why
I
say surrender.
Can I just make another point there as well? I've spoken with you before, and you know my situation about my loss of my two sons on the roads.
My apologies, Kathleen. My apologies. I didn't recall that when I was listening to your voice. Go on.
No, you're okay. You're okay. That was some time ago. But, excuse me. Can I just make an appeal from my heart, Neil, here today? The drivers on the roads, it's like the lunatics have been let out of the asylum, Neil. And I have spoken with other people as well about this, and everybody is just running and racing, breaking red lights. Because I did drive, a few times to the city as well recently. And coming out there from McCurtain Street, heading up by St. Patrick's Church, you know the traffic lights there?
Yeah, sure. Like, there's a day goes by, you don't see people racing against a red light.
Because no, you've a green light, Neil, and there's not one or two, it's three or four that are still heading the other way.
I suppose people know that even though it's red, you still have 3 or 4 seconds to get through, you see, and they dash through it.
Neil, it's no excuse. There's no excuse for the behaviour on the roads. It's just... And, you know, and there's Jeeps now as well, and don't get me wrong, I love them, but, like, they're powerful. And people just sit into them and boot to the board and they're gone.
And do you mind me asking again, because people listening would perhaps maybe be curious as to the loss of your two sons?
They were coming home for their dinner one evening, Neil. I had the dinner ready. Sorry now. I had the dinner ready for them. I was gone to a computer class. And I got the call over in the school... the accident. Yeah. And you know what? It's 19 years next month and the pain never goes away.
I can hear it in your voice.
Don't get me wrong. I live life as best I can. I've one beautiful son left. I have beautiful granddaughters. But on last Sunday was very hard, you know, for Mother's Day.
Oh my God. How old were they, Kathleen? Old were they?
18 and 20.
Were they also driving or something, was it?
One of them was driving one of the boys, Paul, and they were in collision with another car. Yeah. I never got the full story of what happened. And I won't go into that now because in the inquest there were discrepancies of witnesses.
All you know is you lost your two beautiful sons.
Yeah, and you know, people don't realise it after, you know, people think like 12 months after you're gone, and I'm not sitting here on the pity pot, I'm just sitting here to try and make people, like there was two more deaths yesterday evening as well in Ireland. A young man, and he was 18, and I think the other person was in their 40s. I just heard that early this morning. But it's a ripple effect. It's like you throw the pebble, you know, into the water, and the ripple effect, like so many people are affected for a long time afterwards.
And listen,
no matter what you do,
it'll be something that will always be with you. Sadly, you know, but. I have to say, because this topic came up Friday, and then I chatted a little bit about it again on Monday with regards to, because we seem to be hearing more and more of people dying on our roads. And I'm not at all taking from your tragedy, don't get me wrong, but we downloaded and printed off the Road Safety Authority stats for fatalities. And the statistics that I have go back to 1998. And in 1998, 458 people died in that year on our roads. 458. That figure, apart from one or two blips, has been steadily falling since 1998. The last available figure is 2022. 157 people died on our roads. Compare 2022 at 157 deaths and 1998 at 458 deaths. Surely that must be telling us that the message in some way, shape or form is getting through.
I'm surprised now at that, Neil.
I was surprised at it, but
yeah,
there it is. In the 90s, yeah. 458. In the noughties, in and around 360. You look at the 10s, then 180, 190. And the 20s, 130 and 150. You know that kind of way?
Yeah. Can I just say,
unless it's climbing again across 23 and 24, don't get me wrong, that could be the case.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Neil, can I ask you a question here this morning? When have you been last stopped at a checkpoint?
When was I last stopped at a checkpoint for tax and insurance and stuff, kind of thing?
Yeah, or even if they're checking you for alcohol or drugs or whatever.
It's a long time.
Yeah.
Time.
I actually met the lovely President Higgins back there to do with the road, you know, that time there for road traffic victims. It was lovely meeting him. And I posed that question to one of the people just in the RSA. I said, when were you last stopped at a checkpoint? And he said it was about 3 years ago.
But if you were putting that question...
I myself haven't.
How long is it since you were stopped at a checkpoint if you're driving a bit?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Is it? Sorry. Yeah. It was about 2 years ago, Neil, on my way to Ardmore. I think there needs to be more of it there. Now, what they're saying is, I suppose the funding isn't there, but it needs to be done. You can be guaranteed, Neil, today and any other day as well, you have people drinking, driving, smoking cannabis, taking drugs. They're out there because the likelihood of them being stopped is very, very low.
You know... That is possibly true. But however, if my wife were presenting this program right now and you asked her that question, when were you last stopped at a checkpoint? She would say, only 4 days ago. Do you know what I mean? Now, the last
really?
Time I... she was stopped. There was a checkpoint. I don't know where it was.
Oh, right, okay.
So it depends on who you talk to. I'll throw that question out to people. When was the last time you were stopped at a checkpoint? Text 0868104106. But for me, it was probably... Oh, God, it must have been 2 years ago. And I think off the top of my head, it might have been going into Killarney or something like that. But it's all very well about getting away with it. And people often think about, you know, ERA, I'll get away with it. But it's not about that. It's about the consequences.
Look at the Irish, isn't it? The mindset of the Irish, isn't it? Asher Will Transit, you know, the rebel in us. And also the speed vans, they are they're good, they're helpful. But people then, as soon as they're gone by the speed van, they're off again.
Well, a speed van doesn't stop a drink driver, I know what you mean. Good question. Let's see what people have to say on that. Thank you for bringing that up, mm-hmm. Kathleen. Lovely chatting with you. Thank you for listening. Stay listening and do stay in touch.
Okay, thanks, Neil.
All the best. Bye-bye.
Drive safely.
And again, my sincerest condolences on your two beautiful sons. Text 0868104106 when we last stopped at a checkpoint. Can I do this? Can I do an ad break? Okay, I'll talk to Jen. My apologies. And I got a couple of ad breaks to clear. Jen, good morning.
Hi, morning, Neil.
I know you're under pressure, so off you go. What's on your mind?
Yeah, no, geez. Just to the previous lady, my condolences.
Kathleen.
The loss of her sons. Yeah, she's very sad. And my condolences to her. In relation to the state of the city at the moment and that. Maybe I'm picking up people wrong and that, but... in regards to people sleeping on the streets and the drug addicts in the city centre and that, I just kind of almost get a sense of privilege or entitlement of people in that, could those people stop being homeless or could those people stop being drug addicts as if it were that easy, And again, maybe I'm picking people up wrong and their concerns are more towards, the lack of policing in the city centre and government policies around, getting people homes and drug programs and things like that. But I think we just have to, be a bit more compassionate about the situations that people find.
Oh, listen, of course, when a child is born, their parents, if they're good parents, want them to have the very best life possible. These are the life dreams that you talk about, and correctly so. However, our problem really is trying to ascertain who's genuine and who's not.
Yeah, exactly. And how does one do that? You can't judge a book by its cover in that. And I totally agree. I think that the city centre, there's a lot to be done there at the moment and everything. But in regards to people who are genuine and who are not, who's judge and jury there? And are you going to go up to someone in the street and say, well, tell me about your case now, and I'm going to determine whether or not that's genuine before I judge you on your current situation.
Yeah, but surely you can see the organised groups, in all fairness. They're not on any...
Can
you? You come. Can't you? No?
And I don't know what's the prerequisite, what are the conditions that they must meet to predetermine whether or not they're an organised group or not.
Well, first of all, they are organised in a group. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. So does that not give you
a
red flag?
When you talk about people being organised in a group, and again, maybe I've picked up people wrong, but I'm thinking about people, and I know you mentioned on the show yesterday as well that there is a number of people sleeping in the doorway of Penny's at 6:30 in the morning.
Yeah, there's about 12 of them, all lined up in duvets.
Are these people saying, right lads, come on, let's get up and do our job and go out at 6:30 in the morning and get lined up in Penny's so we can beg?
I don't know, I can't answer that question because, as you are right to say, I don't know their life history. My point about that video at the time was that it was posing the question, how did it ever get this bad?
Yeah, and that's it. I think that points towards the problems in Irish society at the moment. It's not the individual, in my opinion, it's not the individual. I think we need to look at the government and the policies that are put in place by the government or their lack of, and the policing as well. I think it all, in my opinion, it all comes back to the government.
Here's a good start. Anybody caught dealing, no matter what it is, no matter what circumstances they come up with, anyone caught dealing should go to prison.
But it's so multifaceted, isn't it? Because I guess in my opinion,
you're dealing with an addiction, go to prison and get help for the addiction in prison.
But this is the thing, if you go to prison, let's make sure that the supports are in prison, that you will get the support for your addiction. Because at the moment, and again, I don't know, are those supports there? Because I know there was a lady caller there yesterday speaking about that. There are programs out there and everything like that. And I'm sure that I know that there are programs out there, but are we adequately resourced for the level of addiction that's in Ireland at the moment?
You got an issue with our jails then as well, with the availability of drugs, and there's a lot of
absolutely.
It getting in.
There's a lot of problems there, there's a lot of problems there, and I just I would appeal that let's not look at the and Jesus, there may very well be groups booths within the city centre and that. But like, let's not look at the individuals and judge them, like, or stopping homeless or stopping addicted to drugs as if it were that easy.
Okay, like, yeah, good points. Thank you, Jen. A bit of compassion. Thank you. Much obliged. Back after the break. Text 0868 104 106.
Call Neil now. 0818 104
106. Yeah. The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Be part of the conversation. The Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. Just jumping in. There's a big response already, so keep them coming. When was the last time you were stopped at a checkpoint? This is not meant as a criticism in any way, shape or form. I'm just curious. I see a lot saying it was during COVID times when everybody was being stopped at checkpoints. I think if you want to go out, don't drink and drive. And if you're going to the pub, there's also the alternative of having Guinness Zero. That's a fine drink, or Heineken Zero. They fly off the shelf, or indeed taking a taxi. However, just be aware, this is passed on from a loyal listener who says, please keep me anonymous, but my husband got a taxi home from town last Wednesday night, 11:30. The driver had to drop two colleagues off to Vienna Woods and then drop my husband home to Little Island. The taxi driver said the fare was €36. My husband went to tap his card but looked at the fare and it said €96. He said, that's 96, not 36. The taxi driver said, oh, sorry, I just want people to watch this, as this also happened to my cousin a month ago. People often just tap without looking at the price. Oh my God, I'm one of those. And if you tap a debit card, you may not ever know, and if you do, it'll be some time. With Revolut, if you're tapping, you'll know pretty much instantaneously. Well, the taxi will be gone at that stage, but it'll pop up on your phone, won't it? Your Revolut fare. But she's saying, I want people to watch this out because it happened to a cousin of mine a month ago. People just often tap without looking at the price. I hope that this is not an occurrence that's happening where, you know, in this case, it was a taxi driver, that it was an error that he put down 9 and a 6 instead of a 3 and a 6. I would hate to think that it's opportunistic, because that is robbery and that's a criminal thing to do to somebody. But anyway, maybe it's happened to you in the past. We do though, don't we? We just tap and walk off and don't think to check. Sometimes you're not even given an opportunity to tap, particularly if you're one of those people and they say, do you want a receipt? And you say, no, I'm grand. You're in big trouble then.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
And incidentally, get involved in the conversation. The Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. We're getting you ready for the St. Patrick's Day festivals with €300 to give away every day, courtesy of ourselves, and carry out off licenses. So we want to hear about your snaky friends. St. Patrick drove the snakes out of Ireland. We want to know if there are any left. So a sneaky, snaky story that either you were involved in or happened to you by a friend or a relative or an ex, whatever the case may be. Keep your snaky stories coming. Text 0868 104 1062. The issue of the St. Patrick's Day weekend. Well, it's not an issue, really. It's probably none of my concern what the Lord Mayor wears when he marches in the parade on Sunday, but it was being suggested that it might well be a Willy Wonka costume. To confirm or indeed refute, we have the Lord Mayor, Kieran McCarthy. I know he's under pressure, so I won't keep him long. Lord Mayor, good morning.
Hi, Neil. How are you doing? It's been 1 week. I'm flying it with you.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do when they replace you as Lord Mayor, because you're the Lord Mayor that keeps on giving, in fairness to you. How will you be dressed on Sunday?
I suppose, look, let's put this in context. Like, 1 p.m. is the parade. There's 800 people in the parade. And because of my acting and my interest in creativity, I am dressing up in a costume that's actually been kindly made by Cork Opera House in connection with the City Council. So the theme is pure imagination. And I was kind of going, well, it'd be nice to have a nice Willy Wonka kind of costume to walk in the parade. And I've been working with Carrick Toole Gospel Choir the last few weeks, so we're going to put on, they're going to be singing things like When the Saints Go Marching In. So basically, Frank and Walters are at the start of the parade. They'll be with the Barrack Street Band, and then kind of maybe two groups back then will be myself with the gospel choir, and Marceline, the Lady Mairess as well, my partner, she'll be dressed up as well. And there's a protocol around the chain, so you can't wear the chain if you have a costume. If I'm wearing a suit and a tie, yeah, the chain is on, but not with a costume.
Okay.
So,
okay.
That's the context of it. So no, look.
Is it? Are you dressing as Willy Wonka himself?
I haven't. Well,
Oompa Loompa, or what?
No, I'm not dressing as an Oompa Loompa. I'm probably an overgrown Oompa Loompa. I haven't seen the full costume, but I know it's our friends in the Opera House are helping.
But it is a character from Willy Wonka's.
There'll be a top hat, and there'll be probably some sort of a purple suit and a cane and elements like that. So
that sounds like Willy Wonka to me, doesn't it?
Yeah. Okay. We can call it what you want.
Okay, and I'm not attempting to make a mountain out of a molehill. Mm-hmm. But was there pushback in City Hall about the Lord Mayor wearing a Willy Wonka costume and the chain at the same time?
No, there's always a protocol around the chain. I mean, there's time for the chain and there's time not for the chain. I mean, the protocol has been in place well before I took over the chain. There's the precedent of Lord Mayors walking in the parade with community groups in the past. It's not the first time Lord Mayor would do it.
It's probably the first time, I would think, that in the 236 years of the chain, that it won't be worn, though, as part of our parade.
That I don't know either. Look, I'm very, very blessed that I get the best advice with corporate affairs in City Hall. And like this decision for next Sunday afternoon, that wasn't made last week. This was kind of made a few weeks ago. And like, I'm very, very lucky that I have the people who are running the St. Patrick's Day Parade, the arts office, they've been sitting down with me. And we've been working closer with them on different elements of what the parade should look like.
And there's an awful lot more to St. Patrick's than just the day itself. But is it that their issue with it is it deemed to be disrespectful to the chain?
You could say that, there's a time for the chain and a time not for the chain.
And why is this a time not for the chain?
Just the costume itself, a colourful, creative costume. It's just the protocol that's in place. I'm not too sure how old the protocol is. I mean, I suppose, as I said, I'm blessed with a corporate affairs department that are connected to my office. So, I mean, I am given advice on certain things, and it's up to me to gain advice as well on certain things.
And what was the advice? That it would be disrespectful, is it?
Yeah. That it wouldn't be. I think actually the term was wouldn't be appropriate. It wasn't.
Why wouldn't it be appropriate if it's a fun day?
I don't know. But look, that's the advice that's given to me. I mean, I can turn around and go no to that particular advice. But to know of all the people who respect the chain and who knows the history of the chain and its story is me. So I'm kind of going, look, I'll take that advice on board. Yes, the Lord Mayor's chain defines who the Lord Mayor is, but you know, when I sign my name in documents in council chamber, like it's Lord Mayor of Cork, I don't have a chain on me. So
I know, and I'm not disputing that. It's one of the biggest events of the year, and I'm just wondering.
But I have two events that morning. Like I've got an event in St. Mary's Cathedral, in our cathedral, and then actually there's a civic reception, there's a bit of a reception actually after the parade for some of the parade participants, and then there's going to be a kind of an after parade award ceremony kind of a week after that, and then like the chain will be present at that.
Okay, but the office of the Lord Mayor, you don't think in any way it would, maybe people might suggest, I'm not quite sure, that it might be tarnished by the fact that the Lord Mayor is dressed up as a Willy Wonka character, as opposed to, you know, being dignified office of Lord Mayor, representing the city, McCartan, McSweeney, and those that wore it and gave their lives for Ireland, and that the chain should be there?
I've thought through that, you know. I mean, I'm very lucky with the best advice that I get from top of the share. So sometimes it's not my best interest to kind of go against that advice because people have been around for 30, 40 years.
But surely the advice might have been from some era, cop yourself on and leave the costume off and go and be the Lord Mayor proper.
I think at this stage, I think corporate affairs, and they're really, really great to work with. They kind of know that I'm creative and colourful, and I like getting stuck into things and hands-on. And
maybe that's what we need.
Neil Pendeville show again to have a chat and let's see where we're at with different things. And
maybe that's what we need, Lord Mayor, is a bit of fun and a bit of entertainment from the top down.
Look, the way I look at it is that next Sunday afternoon, it's 1 o'clock. I'm encouraging all citizens of Cork to come into town, come together. Like in the world that we live in, just togetherness matters more so than ever before. Like the times that we're living is just horrific. Like, look, I listen to your show every day and I'm hearing the stories in a way and I empathize with all the different stories and I try to do my best here. But every now and again, like the St. Patrick's Day Parade, you can just let loose a little bit and just have a little bit of fun. The way I look at it is that the worst that will happen to me on the Sunday afternoon is that I'll probably be singing songs in the parade, going down the parade, or be chatting to people and going, how are things going? And it's just the hands-on. So Yeah, I mean, I think you've made a kind of an Everest out of a mole.
Sometimes that's my job. Can I make one suggestion? And maybe too late now at this stage to fashion up the costumes, but I think it would have been wonderful if we had the Lord Mayor in an Oompa Loompa, if we had the Lord Mayor in a Willy Wonka costume, being followed by every council member, all of our councillors dressed in Oompa Loompa suits, because sometimes they tend to behave like Oompa Loompas in chamber anyway. Is it too late?
You've got a great imagination, I give you that, Neil. I'd say no, my colleagues will be kind of they will be the people texting in now, kind of going no.
All right, okay. Whatever happens, have a great St. Patrick's weekend and enjoy the parade. Thanks, Kieran McCarthy, the Lord Mayor. What do you make of it, lads? The Lord Mayor, without the chain because of protocol or appropriateness, in an Oompa Loompa, a Willy Wonka costume, leading the parade on Sunday. The Lord Mayor's chain stays in its Lord Mayor's chain box in City Hall.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Trying to get an accurate figure as to how much it's going to cost to send all of our politicians and councillors overseas. My understanding is nobody from City Council is travelling overseas this year to any of the St. Patrick's Day parades overseas, but we have a lot of ministers and TDs and stuff who are travelling. We got like 38 of them. That doesn't include all of the different officials that'll be going with them. Micheál Martin in Canada, Michael McGrath in China, Simon Coveney in India and Bangladesh, and Jerry Buttimer, the senator, has gone to San Francisco and Seattle. I did get a list then for the county council. County council travel, when you add flights and hotels together, comes in at just around about €50,000. You're looking at the mayor of Cork going to Chicago with three councillors and four county council officials. And then you have more county councillors going to New York. That would be two councillors and two officials. And then a third tranche of them going to Detroit. These are county council now, which would be two councillors, the deputy mayor and a councillor, and two officials. So the flights are nearly €27,000 and the hotels are €23,500. That's the county council. And you add that to the St. Patrick's Day program where all the ministers are going, 38 of them. And it really and truly is. The only blank area on the map that I can see primarily would be Russia. They none of them going to Russia, but it's hard to even find spaces and where they're not going to be in America. They think that there could be upwards of €250,000 being spent on ministerial trips abroad on St. Patrick's Day, according to the Examiner. I think that's a very low figure when you consider that Cork County Council alone will account for €50,000 on their trips to Chicago, New York and Detroit. Anyway, for whatever else that's on your mind, pick up the phone, text 0868 104 106. Is it a good idea, Lord Mayor dressed as Willy Wonka in the parade, no chain? Text 0868 104 106 on that one. I think you'd also agree with a pretty good idea if all the councillors were dressed as Oompa Loompas. That would make a lot of sense. But anyway, we have some music to play us out today, and lots of music then on the programme tomorrow as we head into the St. Patrick's weekend. But today we got Willie Hammond popping in on accordion, Gary Cronin on fiddle, Mick Willis on piano, and young Tomás Walsh on Illan pipes. And we'll chat with them and get a few sets with them this side of midday. For all other business, text 0868 104 106. I'll get more phone calls in the air and get more texts today, and they'd pick up on everything else tomorrow. So John, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you?
Good. Back on the state of the city centre. Go for it.
Okay. You had a lot of people phoning in, a lot of listeners phoning in to your show and complaining about the types of behaviour and the antisocial behaviour and people being drunk and people being drugged up. You've seen it. I've seen it. Everybody's seen it. The police seen it. But nobody actually phoned into your show and said that where they think a lot of those problems, where the source is actually coming from. So I thought I should phone in, because maybe not everybody's as brave as me. So, but somebody has to actually say it, because it's a fact. You must call a spade a spade. And these type of problems started and have been ongoing since that Simon actually had their building erected in Cork City there along the river, right next to where the old jury's in.
Anderson's, down around Anderson's Quay. But Simon has been there for decades.
And they've been there just over 20 years. And initially, while the Jury's Doyle Group, who owned the Jury's Hotels and Jury's Inns at that time, very, very clever business people, actually objected emphatically. They didn't want the Simon to be built right next door to the hotel. Mm. But whatever happened in the end, what actually happened was the sympathy vote came in and they got permission to build that building.
And why? And now, you're saying that the location is wrong, is it?
It's all wrong because literally you can be high, high, high up on heroin or you can be drunk out of your head. And in about 400 meters, you're right in the city center, Patrick Street. And a lot of the problems coming in Patrick Street are from people staying at Simon.
So where would you locate a homeless center then?
What some countries do is when somebody comes into town like they do and they're out of their minds and they harass people or they do shoplifting or other types of criminal behavior, what happens in other countries is that the person's brought before the court and then if he's brought before the court, say, three times, he gets an option. He can either go straight to jail or he can go to the rehab. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm, mm.
And he doesn't get a choice, does he want to go to a rehab. The judge sentences him to the rehab, and that rehab means it would be a location outside the city, away from everybody else that wants to just have a normal day in town, walking, you know, doing a bit of shopping or maybe window shopping and things like that.
So is this the South African model then, is it, where you either have the option of jail or rehab, and then you're do a bit of hard work while going through rehab, is
no.
it?
No, what happens is it's they send them to this sort of, it's a rehab come kibbutz. So basically what happens is, exactly. So what happens there is there's no drink, so you can't go to the off-license just around the corner from Simon where they are at the moment. You can't go shoplifting because there's no shops around the corner from where Simon is right now. And you can't do any antisocial behavior because you're not 400 meters away from the city center in the heart of Cork City.
Where are you then? Are you on a big farm plowing fields and milking cow? What?
Exactly. So you're on a big farm, and there's plenty of space here in Ireland, as you know, plenty of green places. And what they do is they go there. It's cold turkey. There's no drink. There's no drugs. One person collects the chicken eggs every morning. Another person milks the cows every morning. Another person is planting tomatoes, lettuces, and things like this. And then they all cook for themselves. It's like a kibbutz. But there's no drink and there's no drugs. And you can't be around the corner in Patrick Street begging people who are just trying to do a bit of shopping. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because what we've had for the last 20 years or more is this, and it's got worse and worse, as you know. When Simon first went in there, it was all a very good idea. But the facts of the matter is, as the years go by, the situation is getting worse and worse.
Yeah, they haven't fixed it. They haven't fixed it in South Africa, though. It's a few years since I was there. But I do remember reading that South Africa has a big problem with crack cocaine, with mandrax, with heroin, with opiates, with cannabis, with a lot of drug problems there and on the increase in South Africa. Much of it to do with, I get it. I mean, much to do with poverty and being surrounded by other substance abusers you're likely to start. But it's not...
Actually, there was no problem in South Africa before. Before the ANC took over the country. When the ANC took over the country, we had an influx of a whole lot of Africans from all neighboring countries. And when that influx happened, we also had, because we had sanctions, there were sanctions against South Africa.
I know the history, and I don't want to go down that route because we'll end up talking about human rights and apartheid and things like that. But I'm just making the point that there is a big youth drug addiction surge in South Africa, just like here. It's not the promised land that you're trying to portray.
Well, I don't know. You can see people there in Cork City.
Oh, yeah.
And they've been going for years and years and years on these drugs, and there doesn't seem to be any idea of trying to rehabilitate people.
Okay. Good points, well made. I just want to stay with the location of the homeless centre. So just hold on there, because Anthony from Cork City Homeless Group, who helps the homeless and feeds the homeless and puts clothes on their back and gives them what they need, he just wanted to jump in on the conversation. Anthony, go ahead.
Yes. How's it going there, guys? And I suppose I'd just like to know there is where would this man like the homeless people to go? Because it's going to get 10 times worse with all these new regulations coming in. Now, with these new regulations, these new refugees that come into town, they get 3 months in state accommodation, and after that they have to find their own accommodation.
Yeah. Yeah, so Prez is a good example of that, Joe Griffin Street, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, where are these people going to find houses? There's houses around as it is at the moment to house these homeless people or whatever. Now, he was on about drugs there and what have you, and put them into prison, put them into drug treatment. It's not that easy to get into drug treatment, Niall. Right? Plus, the person themselves has to say that they want to give up the drugs.
Yeah.
And while they're on the streets, that's going to be hard.
And even if they're facing a jail sentence and they go for the option of rehab, it doesn't mean that they want rehab or they're not even in a position to rehab. Yeah. But the location of Simon, is that helping or hindering the city for everybody else? That's the point that he's making.
It's not, no. As far as I can see, it's not. Because I go around to all the homeless around the whole city, no matter where they are, in B&Bs or whatever. And we look after them with meals and what have you. And if they're stuck for something else, you know, we sort them out, you know, with clothes or anything like that. We source it for them. But they won't do the dirt on their own doorstep. Now, if they mess around with Simon, they're caught on cameras.
I think it's the proximity of Simon to the city centre, when those that are off their heads or in the throes of addiction or whatever the case may be can be so close to the city. Something has changed in the last 5 or 10 years, and I know that the availability of drugs is the reason, but that's not good enough for people who want their city back.
They have free travel, Niall. They come in from outside the city.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if you drove down Patrick Street that night there.
Yeah.
And look at the door of Pennies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Are the shortest bump bids?
Yeah. I mean, I had video footage there sent to me 2 days ago, 6 o'clock in the morning. This would have been on probably Monday morning at 6 a.m. with 12 or 13 of them all lined up in the Pennies doorway with duvets asleep.
Yeah, that's it. And they're not running Pennies. They're in Marks and Spencer's doorway as well.
Yeah, yeah. And that has nothing to do with the location of Simon, you're saying?
That has nothing got to do with the location of Simon. These fellas that are there in those doorways are professional beggars.
Do you know that?
They're not homeless.
Do you know that the chaps in Pennies are professional beggars?
Yes.
Okay, and from where have they come?
Huh?
Where have they come from?
They just come out of the woodwork in a van during the night. Well, not during the night. At night time. And they set up their beds at around 9 o'clock when Penny's clothes and Max and Spencer's clothes set up on their beds.
Right.
They're even in the doorways to survive as well.
But why would they want to sleep the night though? Why wouldn't they just rock up at 8 o'clock in the morning or 9 o'clock in the morning?
No. At night time, they take over Patrick Street at night time there for begging.
And then they sleep the night, is it?
And they sleep during the night. No.
And what do they do when they wake up then?
They just pack up their sleeping bags and their things, and they're all loaded into a white van, and off they go.
So all of the individuals that I showed video footage of on social media, not showing who they were because they were completely all wrapped up, they will literally get out of Penny's doorway just before Penny's opens or whatever, pile into a van and go where?
We don't know where they go. They just disappear and then they come back in the evening time again.
But they do get into vans, is it?
They get into a white van. I often see them unloading their their bags out of the back of a white van there in Patrick Street one night there. And I said, look at this. Carry on now, like.
Unbelievable.
Well, now, all you have to do is look at the condition of their duvets and their sleeping bags. They'd be spotless.
They were spotless, yeah, funnily enough.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's a shame, though, because we're taken for mugs then when we see these and feel sorry for people who are saying.
Exactly. Like, all that money that they collect doesn't stay in the country. It's taken out of the country. Now, if you go back in the history books there, back to last year, there's a fella caught in the airport with 35 grand. Going out of the country.
Right. And did he have to
the
be...
money was seized.
Why was it seized? He wasn't to be able to account for it, is it? He wasn't able to account for it?
He wasn't able to account to where he got the money from, plus he was leaving the country with more than 10,000 euros.
That's right. There is a limit, yeah. And you think that that was suspicious, you know?
Oh, big time. Big time.
Right. Where was he going, do you know?
Back to Romania.
Romania. Okay, guys. Thank you both. Thank you, Jerry. Thank you, John. And thank you, Anthony from Cork City Homeless Group. Actually, funnily enough, I got an interesting text this morning. Now, it is Thursday morning, so Seamus will correct me on this if I am wrong, but I believe that means that certainly down in the GPO, we've seen it on Thursday mornings. There's a huge amount of people down there, and they will be going to collect their social welfare. You'd also see characters who are down there also hanging around, holding on to all of their, I guess, not necessarily their social welfare cards, but I suppose, yeah, their social welfare cards and their ID. They give them their cards, they go in and get their dole, and they come back and they give it to this individual who holds on to it, takes the money off them because they owe drug debts. Am I right?
You are right. You'll see it on a Monday. Generally, if you go up to McCurtain Street, you'll see drug dealers both sides of the street there by the post office.
So it could be there or it could
that
be the GPO.
They'll end down at the GPO where they will hand over the ID to those in the homeless community in addiction. They'll go in.
Because they owe them money, is it?
Yeah. They'll go in, they'll collect
their own
social welfare. Yeah. This has nothing to do with the post office. It's the post office are doing what they do for everybody else. It's just that this is the venue that it happens. It happens down on the GPO as well. And it also happens on Disability Day, which would be a Thursday, as far as I remember.
Okay, and then they give the card back and pay off their debt and have a few bob then left or whatever, buy more drugs. No, the reason I mentioned that is I got a text saying, Neil, I can't come on because I'm in work in town right now, but there was a big Garda presence around the GPO this morning. There was about 10 people arrested around the GPO this morning. While it's despicable what happened last week, isn't it the amazing power of one blogger when we've been shouting about what's going on for years? The implication there, what's being implied there, is that unfortunately a girl got a beating on the GPO, just outside the GPO, last Thursday morning.
Last Thursday morning, I took the call. It was actually 9:10. She came from Dublin to do some work. She was attacked. You know, there were two different reports I received by call. One saying that there were three people, others saying that there were six. Now, subsequently, there has been somebody arrested for that, but she ended up being taken to hospital where
fractured
she needed metal plates in her ankle. Now, you know, I've done this before. I've gone out with Bernard O'Hare, the campaigner for homeless rights, and we, back in 2021, we did a major piece where we spoke to those in addiction, and we spoke to a drug dealer as well down around Simon and other areas of the city where they're actually collecting their social welfare, and that had a big impact back in October 2021, but nothing has ever happened.
Okay.
Nothing changed, but it is surprising that well, look, I'm not taken for the fact that the poor girl got
no
got
the
attacked,
implication from the text is that this is what it took last week's story, you know, which was shared very much on social media. Now, the poor girl, nobody should go through what she went through.
No.
But I think the implication is that because of that big Garda presence, like the GPO, a week later, 10 people arrested. I think that to some extent, I would love to think that these were 10 dealers, but who knows who they were.
We won't know, we'll find out in the next couple of weeks,
Alright, let me just get one fast call on, because I'm conscious of the fact that I want to get live music in to start the St. Patrick's weekend early, so we can load the lads in if you want. We've got four musicians to play us out in studio this morning. They're going to need a little time to get set up, so while all that's happening, Jerry, don't go anywhere. I want to talk to you after the break.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now, 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
All right, okay. Just one quick call this side of a bit of live music in studio. Jerry, good morning.
Morning, Neil. How are you?
I'm good. Go ahead.
Right. About the begging, right?
Yeah.
I saw this personally years ago in Bristol. And it's all professional begging. In Bristol, there was guys going around in a van. They had a warehouse. They had people from Romania, another country, poor so-called people. Most of them were gypsies, I think, at the time. And they were dropped off at 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning, collected it in the evening, and they were given a target for begging every day. The guys that were behind it had a big, it was like an old warehouse where they had beds, cookers, washing facilities for these people. And if these people didn't make their target, they wouldn't get their food in the evening. Now,
if they didn't make their target, they wouldn't be fed and they were kept in a shed overnight. Yeah.
Yes. And then they were brought back again the next day onto the streets again. And that's exactly what's happening in Cork.
Isn't it? Well, I mean, just listening there to somebody would know, somebody in the homeless services, saying the 10 or 15, 10 or 12 that were in the doorway of Penny's in very clean-looking duvets, they're professional. That's all orchestrated.
Of course they are, Okay. And they were able to sort this problem out in Bristol, and it can be sorted anywhere in the world. But you have to have the people in authority to push it.
It said Bristol City Council has spent thousands banning beggars this year, and this is an article from like 5 or 6 years ago where they're actually finding them, bringing them to court. Is that what the case is? Court cases surged when they brought a law in banning begging in Bristol City.
Yeah.
Well, it's not illegal to beg here.
No, but it should be illegal.
Well, it should be illegal for people to be pretending to need help.
Yeah, exactly.
For profit.
Neil, these are Romanian beggars.
Not all of them. Not all of them.
And we have here in Cork, like we have all over the country, we have a lot of professional, good, honest to God, Romanian people.
Right?
Yeah. And I don't want to be slagging off Romanian people, but I'm slagging off the people who are behind all of this. There is a place I saw my own twice because I was brought there in Bucharest a number of years ago, and it's where all the rich gypsies live. And its nickname is called Dallas. And in Dallas, as they call it, you have mansions of villas.
I've heard that. And I don't want to do anything that would put anybody or their families at risk, if you get me, right?
Sure.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
I really don't. But I mean, I can't help but remember the call a few minutes ago where a guy taking 35 grand back to Romania was stopped and the money was seized.
That's why you're calling places
in outside Bucharest, Dallas, you know?
Exactly.
All right.
So, the thing that man from South Africa made a great point, he's right. And fair play to your man Anthony that was out helping the people, right?
Yeah.
But the reality is the cart is before the horse. These people should be taken out. And I said this to you before. There should be a rehab centre at a farm out in the countryside. They're picked up, they're taken off the street. People then could go about their business and they get the choice of being rehabilitated.
Okay, good point. I'm out of time for now, Jerry, but don't be a stranger. Feel free to call again and we maybe have another conversation where I'm not under as much pressure for time. But thank you for now. Text 0868104106. Pick up the phone on 0818104106 as we head into the St. Patrick's weekend. It's not just a day, it's an entire weekend of events, and I'll be telling you more about that in the on tomorrow's programme, where there's a lot of different activity happening in the city. But one of them is the Cayley Moore in City Hall on this coming Saturday. And in studio to play us a few tunes, I imagine two sets of three tunes, each of them. And leading up the party is my old buddy Willie Hemi Hammond on accordion, Gary Cronin on fiddle, Mark Willis on piano, and a fellow compadre of mine on the Ilum pipes, young Tomás Wall. So, Willie, good morning. We'll chat in a couple of seconds' time, my man. Life is good.
All good now?
Strap on that box and let's hear what you guys have got.
Okay, we're going to get Tomas to give us a... Off you go.
Essence of what we are, lads. It really and truly is. Well done, guys. It's great to see young fellas playing the pipes. Well done, Tomas and thanks. Willie and Gary and Mick. But the big Cayley Moore, Hammy,
yes.
Saturday.
Yes, it's going to be another great one. This time indoors in the City Hall.
Any experience necessary for people that want to go along?
Even if you have two left feet, you're welcome. No, I mean, there's a lot of dancers going to be coming from Ballyfihan and from all around the city and places. So it's a very big free event. So it's marvellous.
Like, you've taken over from the great Timmy the Briton calling these, aren't you? You're the caller of the event.
Well, yeah, you couldn't replace him. You could not replace Timmy. What an art. What a man. Great. I followed him everywhere.
Yeah. Round the
sides of hills, looking for dances.
Round the corner. So how many people will you get into City Hall? Because this will clearly sell out.
Well, it is practically sold out at 600. Is where we're kind of allowing, because the kind of dancing area is about, you know, 300-400 people, and then another 200 kind of sitting around.
St. John's ambulance standing by.
Yes. Well, if you probably remember in 2005, we had about 2,500 on the streets dancing.
And not a sprained ankle amongst them.
Don't mention those words, please.
We'll be doing the Walls of Limerick and the Siege of Venice and all the popular stuff.
And the Haymakers Cheek and the Highland Fling and a few more like that. We'll be dancing some sets as well. The Merchant set and the Shliv Locra set and the Ballyvourney Jig and the Connemara set. So we'll cater for everybody.
So is there any point telling people that they can still get a ticket on eventbrite.ie?
We're actually releasing another 100. The last 100, because there was some came back from various places, so there's 100 left.
They want to be fast. These are free tickets.
Free. And it's eventbrite.ie.
Okay, and it's happening on Saturday. What time? Like 3 hours of it?
Three hours, from 3 o'clock to 6 o'clock, and there might be a small little break in the middle.
And you'll floor a lot of porter after that?
Well, water anyway, dance versus me drinking
water.
No,
I said after.
Yeah, well, hopefully. Right. But we've a lovely little band, and we've been around places. We go to Warwick Folk Festival, myself and Gary, every so often, and Mick plays at the Folk Festival, and Tomas plays with the Coltis in Cork, and they're having their fla in May, is it? Yeah.
He's got a fine set of Mitchell pipes there on him, in fairness. You enjoying it, Tomás?
Oh yeah, absolutely, yeah.
When did you start? I think you were an accordion player first, were you?
I was, yeah. And then when I kind of got into it through the accordion, and when I saw the pipes, then I, you know, if you're bitten by the sound of the pipes, you know, yeah, you kind of have to play them then, like.
How'd you find it at the start? It was like trying to wrestle an octopus, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. But you get used to it over time, I suppose, yeah.
Fair play to you, Bob. We're keeping a close watch on you and the rest of the lads as well. Okay, so give us another set out, lads. I think it's a couple of reels, is it? Mick Willis on piano, Tomás Walsh on Ilan pipes, Gary Cronin on fiddle, and the great Hammy Hammond on the accordion. In your own time, lads, get us in the mood.
Yeah, after four.
Love it all day long. Great to have you in studio, kicking us off that little bit early. In fact, there is a Cork's traditional Irish music trail as well, which starts tonight, actually. The first gig is 9:30 tonight on Spalpeen Phonic. It's the Lee Sessions and all the load of different pubs. You've got in Spalpeen's on board, the Sinead, JJ Walsh's, 77, look, another one's, the Gables is on board and places like that. And you can get full details online if you're just searching the St. Patrick's Day Parade. But somebody in the know is Trish Murphy, who's the event manager with Cork City Council. She joins me by phone. Trish, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. Thanks for having me. How are you?
It's exciting times. When you hear a bit of music like that, you get in the mood for it. So I know about the Lee Sessions and the pubs on board. Give us an idea of some other highlights then, will you?
Oh, it's a very, very busy weekend all around. And it's a big shout out to all the cultural venues in the city, pubs, bars, cultural museums, etc., because they're all getting on board behind and they've activities
Elizabeth Fork does, Triskell Arts Centre, lots of things happening, yeah?
Lots of things happening. So in Elizabeth Fort, aside from the fact that it's open normally for its tours, etc., we have a circus factory doing circus jinx, hijinks, the whole afternoon of circus, aerial, etc., happening up in the historic Elizabeth Fort. That's free, but it is ticketed as well. And check out the Patrick's Day website in terms of checking availability on that. But we've also, there's also, as you mentioned, the Lee Sessions happening in the Kaylee. There's music and activity all around the city. So look, the best thing I could say is pick up the programme, which is around the city, and there's a whole wealth of things going on.
Yeah, so, there's going to be 12,000 multicoloured balls cascading down St. Patrick's Hill at one stage.
That's true indeed. You'll see them bouncing down Patrick's Hill, and that's part of the Cork Lions Club ball run, which is supporting their charity in relation to that.
Full details of Cork on the CorkCity.ie website / Cork City St. Patrick's
Festival. What about the route of the parade? Is that like a South Mall start then?
It is indeed. And look, it's a big parade again this year. We had over 55,000 people on the parade route watching it last year. And we're hoping for, fingers crossed, good weather. So we've big numbers again. And we've 3,100, almost 3,200 participants. So it'll be a great day. The parade is starting at the junction of South Mallon and Parnell Place. Yeah. And it goes down South Mall, Grand Parade, Patrick Street, and finishes at the end of Merchants Quay. So it starts at 1 o'clock. We advise everyone, get in early and use park and ride if you can. Also, just because there will be a lot of road closures in, obviously. But full details of all of that is up on our website as well.
It's a 1 o'clock start. It should take 2 hours to finish up in and around 3 o'clock. That'll be a fabulous event. And the weather isn't too bad. So at least, you know, it's not as if people are going to get soaked. It's not too bad.
Exactly. There's some sunshine. There's definitely sunshine coming in. We're getting all rid of all of the rain at this early start of the weekend.
Get it out of the way. Full details on the website. Thanks so much, Tracy. I'm a little tight on time, but you are right. It's all on the St. Patrick's Festival website. And all you got to do is Google it and it'll take you straight into Cork City Council website and into the subsection for the parade and all of the other family-orientated events and all of the different sessions that are on in the pubs that are doing live trad music and why wouldn't they? And of course, the Kayleigh Moore on Saturday afternoon. Unfortunately, I'm out of time. I've got an awful lot that I didn't get to this morning. We'll pick it up in the morning. Have a good day. I'll see you tomorrow.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.